Dr. Michael Ostrom is kind enough to join us as he does weekly. Mike, always a pleasure. Let's react to what the governor announced yesterday, saying as soon as this Monday, middle school and high schools can open up on a hybrid style, and hopefully by March 8th, all the kids, if they want to, can head back to middle and high schools. We do have numbers dropping off in the state. We have them dropping off across the country, really across the globe. At the same time, as you've been telling us for weeks, you have very, very serious concerns about a variant in particular, and how the 3 months coming up could be as dark as we've seen so far. So how do you balance your concern about what you think potentially can and will happen with the governor's decision?
Well, let me first of all just say that, you know, I need to divorce the issues of what we're trying to do politically, economically, in our communities, which all have very legitimate needs and requirements, and that which is happening from an infectious disease perspective. You know, I would not want to be a governor or mayor today in large cities having to make these decisions where, you know, they're basically a five-way shock absorber between, you know, parents wanting their children in school, parents not wanting, teachers who want to teach, who believe they can do it safely, teachers who have a legitimate fear of getting infected or bringing the virus home. At the same time, we all know our kids need to be in school. This is a very important part of development and education, socialization, et cetera. We know that it has tremendous impacts on the workforce in terms of, you know, who has to take care of the kids if they're home doing distance learning. So all those are really legitimate, very important issues. All I can comment on with any competency, you might say, and some I'm sure in this call would suggest it's not even competent, is what's happening from an infectious disease standpoint. And we are being lulled into this false sense of security right now that is really dangerous. I can tell you that these B117 variants, the ones that came from the UK, that are much, much more transmissible, 30 to 70% more, they are surely causing more serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths, are literally seeding the entire country. Back to data from just today in Florida and California, you can't believe how quickly these are starting to take off. Now, they haven't yet resulted in big increases in cases, and that's exactly what happened in these countries in Europe, in the Middle East, where, in fact, initially they just seeded it quietly, and kind of the doubling of 2 to 4 to 8 to 16, which really was under the radar screen. And then one day it goes from 2,000 to 4,000 to 8,000 to 16,000, that kind of numbers. And I am more certain than I've been each day, the numbers and what we're tracking right now is B117 is incredibly challenging. It's not looking good. Now, you can say, well, but look how low the cases are, and we have to celebrate that. They are. They're coming down. I feel a little bit uncomfortable, though, celebrating too much. 85,000 cases a day would have been a much worse situation than when we had a house on fire in July at 70,000 cases a day, or particularly 32,000 cases a day last April when we thought the house was on fire. So we've kind of come to this numb state of looking at cases and hospitalizations as, well, it wasn't 300,000, that's true. But the point of it, it's given us this kind of message that everything's okay, we're done. Vaccine-wise, we're in at least good shape yet with this variant, that the vaccines we have protect against it. It's not like the ones from South Africa or Brazil, which while they're here in the United States, are not circulated widely at all. The challenge is we're not going to have nearly enough vaccine. Our group has actually looked at this very carefully, and our best estimate is that by the end of March, 50 million out of the numbers of in this 53 million adults over age 65 and older in the United States, and 30 million will not have any access to vaccine. 30 out of that 53 million will not have a drop by the end of March. Those people will be heavily impacted. So we've got a long ways to go yet. And so when you ask me about the governor's decision, I have little doubt that we will be a different state in 4 to 6 weeks. Now, go ahead, send your emails in, send your phone calls about how, you know, I'm sending us all to hell. But the bottom line is that's what the virus is doing, and it's going to do it. And I'm just the messenger.
So on that 30 million out of the 53 million, is it just that we don't have the supply? Is that it? We don't have the operating system? We don't have the vaccinators themselves? Why?
No, it's vaccine. I mean, and let me give you an example right now. I mean, this is a challenge. When you and I had this discussion about we don't have second doses stored away, today, mm-hmm. as we sit here, we have 24 million Americans who have received their first dose and are waiting for their second dose in the next 2 to 3 weeks. All we have available is the 1.7 to 2 million new doses a day. So if I just vaccinate second doses in that group of 24 million, I could literally spend the next 12 to 15 days doing nothing but second doses, which is starting to happen in more and more communities where nobody new gets it because we don't have enough vaccine. And the vaccine is coming as quickly as they can bring it. It's not somehow that somebody screwed up. It's just what the manufacturing capacity is. But at the same time, we got a problem. We've got this B117 surge that is coming. And, you know, you can't be denied. People can say, well, you know, let me know what you're talking about. Well, you know, we'll go back and look at that in 10 weeks. I'm telling you, everything in my best professional judgment says this is going to be a very difficult time. So everybody who's doing all the planning to bring everything back, unfortunately, also has to have that other plan available that then does everything to go the other way. And again, so, it's not me, it's the virus.
One last question here on school, and then I want to get to other things.
Sure.
The vaccine debate and whether all teachers should be vaccinated, that's out there. Governor Walz believes with the additional vaccines over the next couple of weeks, almost all teachers will be in a position to be vaccinated. The White House is saying that they don't believe teachers need to be vaccinated to go back to school. If it was somebody in your family, Mike, or if it was a good friend who was teaching at high school or middle school, where the potential rates are noticeably higher for kids of that age compared to, you know, kindergarten, third, fourth grade, would you tell this person you're okay without a vaccine, or would you tell this person you need to get a vaccine before you go back?
Well, unfortunately, that situation, as you just laid out, is even more complicated than you laid out. What I mean by that is if you climb on the scene of an accident, and somebody has a very, very severely lacerated leg to the point of, you know, it's about ready to fall off. If they're not breathing and their heart's not beating, you do CPR first, okay? Then you worry about the leg. I'm telling you right now that if we want to see any kind of measurable reduction in the number of people who get seriously ill, require hospitalization to the point of really challenging our healthcare system and die, we ought to be putting all the vaccine we can right now in 65-year-olds and older because, in fact, 80% of the deaths continue to occur in that age group. And so that's a challenge that nobody wants to say because, you know, I'm going to have a lot of teachers mad at me, and I understand that. But my job right now is to give you the information that says this is how we can save the most number of people's lives, and that's what's going to happen. Now, as far as schools go, again, I think schools are going to be a distance learning and not too distant future because of what's going to happen with B117. Every country in Europe and the Middle East that has been hit by B117, as their last resort, they closed their schools, but in every case they had to continue to try to shut down this transmission. So I'm just taking a page right out of their book, not anything we invented here. So I would say at this point, I'd love to see teachers vaccinated. I'd love to see essential workers vaccinated. We have so disproportionately impacted on the BIPOC community, the Black, Indigenous, and persons of color communities as essential workers. So there's a lot of different people that I wish I could vaccinate today. If you're a teacher today in particularly grades 7 or 8 and younger, we have seen very little evidence of any measurable transmission there from students to teachers to students. Now, when you get in the older age groups, that's not true. We have seen more in high schools and purely in colleges. And so I understand that. My challenge is if you only have so much of a resource. And so I'd ask you this, Chad, this is not a fair question. Your father's not with us anymore. But if you were sitting on the other side of a desk and your father and mother were sitting there, both over age 65, they both had underlying health conditions, and you had two vials, one dose of each, two doses of vaccine. You could give one both, or you could give one dose and the other one dose. And the data I think we have right now is surely there to suggest that one dose can provide really good protection, and we would postpone the second dose till the spring. What would you do? Would you give two doses to one and none to the other? Would you give one to one? That's the kind of decisions I think we need to be making right now. It's not just how many people can get vaccinated. What are we going to do to take care of those people 65 years of age and older so that they don't become part of this surge?
Well, on that, and I would probably, like most people, give one and one. I saw the report that came out this morning where the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which we hope is approved mm-hmm. fairly soon, where now some information is suggesting, because initially there was talk it would be just one vaccine, right? And you would receive all of its capabilities with one vaccine, where they might now be saying it is two shots, you know, to get to their full ability. Mm-hmm. Does that downplay in any way our optimism about Johnson & Johnson?
At this point, until we see the data, I don't think we can say anything about what one or two shots. You know, most of that data has not yet been viewed in the public's domain. And so, you know, let's wait and see and take it where it is, whether they go with one or two and what that means. I can't comment. I do know that they have indicated that they were not going to have nearly as much vaccine available immediately as they once thought they would. And so we're not going to have the immediate help in March and April as it was once anticipated. You know, by the summer, I think we're going to be in a much better position. But for right now, we've got a limited amount of vaccine coming in.
Last thing. I see a story today where one-third of military service members have opted no, that they don't want the vaccine. We have data all over the place of individuals who outside the military, everyday life, are saying, no, I'm not going to take it. We've talked before about this, Mike, but it's so important. What do you want to say to people? Because sometimes the percentage is 20, 30, 40, 50% in various categories where they're saying no to the vaccine. What do you say to those folks?
You know, first of all, you have to listen. This is when your ears should be big and your mouth should be small. Find out why. And it varies by different groups. And then how do you address those? As we talked about before, Chad, one of the challenges we had is we did very little to get us ready for that last inch, putting the needle in the arm. We had a program called Operation Warp Speed, which had a lot of military connotations to it. We then had this sense of a political thumb on the scale of approval or not approval of the vaccine, which it actually wasn't, but it's perceived as such. Then we have a vaccine that's called a messenger RNA vaccine, for which there's been so much disinformation that it somehow will impact the genes of your body if it's injected in. And then you add in this issue of the natural and normal occurring reactions that occur with vaccines that, you know, we have to expect, but it's a small, small price to pay for, you know, being protected. But you add that all together, and there are a lot of people in the healthcare area saying, you know, I'm just going to postpone my dose for a little while and see what else happens. And what we need to do is really help them understand that these vaccines, with what we know on the safety side of it, how effective they are, how they can save your life, clearly. We need to understand if you have cultural issues. You know, I'm part of a study right now looking at young black men in our community, smart, intelligent individuals who are saying up to 75% of the time, I'm not going to take it. This is Tuskegee all over again, that terrible experiment that was done on black prisoners. You know, it's each one's different. And so what we need to do is understand those and address them head on. Part of the challenge we have is the amount of disinformation out there, absolute falsehoods that are just not true. But it's giving people pause to say, well, maybe I'll wait. The problem is if you wait, you also may be dead from COVID-19. That's the challenge.
We got to go. Good stuff as always. Important
stuff.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, Mike.
Take care. Bye.
Dr. Michael Ostrom on News Talk 830 WCCO.